listening to The Moment, an interview podcast series on life. We interview and capture conversations with creative minds, thought leaders, disruptors, and the people that are doing what they love while challenging the status quo. You can find the show notes on our website, themomenthq.com, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. But for now, let's dive into The Moment. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Moment podcast, uncovering your life-changing moments. Today, our guest is Jack DeLosa. He is the founder of Australia's largest education institution for entrepreneurs, which has a community of over 300,000 members. Jack's vision is to improve traditional education by introducing a style of learning that puts the individual first. His latest book, Unwritten, Reinvent Tomorrow, outlines the unconventional wisdom he's become known for, to living a life on purpose and making the world a better place. So let's dive right in. Hi, Jack. So good to talk to you again.
Good to chat to you again, Mon. Thank you very much for having me.
Congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
I just wanted to share with the readers what I love most about this book. It really is a bit of a personal journey of yours, which you share about, you know, getting to where you are today. But it also, you know, touches on the lives of many great people who have in history and who are currently doing great things in the world.
Yeah.
So what was your underlying intention for the book?
To really elevate the conversation around what it means to be an entrepreneur and what it means to be anybody pursuing a dream. You know, I think that we have a sort of societal expectation around what it means to be an entrepreneur. And I don't think being an entrepreneur necessarily needs to mean starting your own business. And secondly, I think we have a world that views success through a materialistic lens as opposed to a lens of doing something great or doing something that you love. When I say something great, I don't necessarily mean my size. I mean my importance to you and importance to the people around you. And so it's really an it's a discovery of many individuals and movements and moments in history that have left a significant legacy. And it's an invitation and encouragement to figure out and determine and decide, obviously not instantly, but over a period of time, who do I want to be? How do I want to live? And what legacy, however big or however small, a legacy could be, I want to raise two great children. A legacy could be, I want to be a great primary school teacher. Or it could be, you know, I want to influence large-scale societal change or build a billion-dollar business or and anything in between. And so it's just, it's a invitation slip to sort of throw out any preconceived ideas of success and legacy and entrepreneurship and materialistic success and get back to what's important to the individual.
That's what I really loved, excuse me, about the book as well, because, you know, so much of our society is focused on this success and doing something worthwhile, having to be this big, huge thing that's in the world.
Yeah.
And that can be sometimes, but again, not everyone has that kind of a vision, and I think it can make those people who don't yearn to do that feel small or like what they isn't worthwhile.
That's right. Yeah, you know, I often use you know, my father's an example, right? And he had a very successful career and a successful life, so it might not be a great example. But today, you know, he lives in Daylesford, which is a country town an hour and a half out of Melbourne, you know, with his wife and a veggie patch, and speaks to his two boys, you know, a couple of times a week, and that's what makes him happy, right? The last thing he should do is go out and start a business or start a political movement or and the other thing is he sort of did do some of that throughout his career. But, you know, another example is my best friend Andrew Morello. His mum, you know, has three children, of which he's one, and wherever they are around Australia, you know, on any given Thursday, they all fly back to Moonee Ponds in Melbourne and she cooks them spaghetti bolognese every Thursday night. And that's what brings her joy. That's her legacy, is creating and sustaining and building this magical, beautiful family, right? And so there's no more nobility in, you know, in the book I talk about people, you know, people I have a huge amount of respect and admire, people like Nelson Mandela or Dr. Martin Luther King or Oprah Winfrey, but there's no more nobility in leading the black civil rights movement to what Morello's mum does, right? There's no difference between that. You know, in my view, legacy cares not for scale. It's not about how far-reaching it is. It's about how deeply important and meaningful it is to you.
Absolutely. I agree. I really like that. Mm. And so obviously, I mean, you talk about this in the book, but for the people who haven't really read your book yet, you've had a bit of a tough journey to get to where you are as well. It hasn't been smooth sailing. And I think, you know, in the media can portray people that are very successful, like that it's just been smooth sailing. Now, for you, you had an experience with losing one of your brothers, Tom. And obviously that is such a huge thing that's going to impact somebody's life. So can you just share how that really impacted you?
Yeah. You know, I think that early on, when it happened, I didn't know how to deal with it because I was 18. He was 21 years of age. He passed away as a result of drug use. He'd taken heroin and then he asphyxiated. When you're 18 and your brother dies, unless you have experience with dealing with grief and loss prior, which of course everybody does, just not to that degree in my instance, you kind of figuring it out. So I just ignored it. You know, I started my business. Tom passed away on a Friday. I started the business. We were going to start together the following Monday, so 3 days later, and just kind of kept on going on with my life. And then slowly, I don't know, the grief, I suppose, sort of creeps up and up and up and up and up. And if you don't sit and process and deal and digest and talk and cry and be still and, you know, just honour it, it kind of takes hold of you a bit. So, you know, after the first 6 months where I was kind of numb, after that I was just highly anxious and just had all of these very destructive behaviours and sort of emotions that would take over, if you like. Mm. And so I really had to address it. And then when I started to address it, that's when, you know, I think you get the growth.
And so I guess for someone that may be going through something similar or experiencing things like anxiety or experiencing grief, how did you manage that for yourself?
Well, so I don't want to paint too broad of a brush over the industry, but I went to try and see, I reckon I saw about 14 counsellors, psychologists, psychiatrists, and they all said the same thing. Mm-hmm. You've got depression, mm-hmm. You're sick, we need to give you drugs to make you better again.
Mm.
And even at 18, because I'd studied a lot of psychology, I'd studied a lot of leadership, I'd studied a lot of great entrepreneurs, I'd studied a lot, right, outside mm-hmm. of school by the age of 18. And so I was so fortunate that I had just the awareness, even at that age, to say, I'm not sick, I'm not depressed, my brother's died, I'm sad. It's called being human, you know.
Yeah, of course.
And so I never actually found a professional that could help me. And, you know, later in my life I found great life coaches and all of that. So I have found a couple great people since. Mm. But at that age I just couldn't. What it was for me at that age, because I was so emotionally illiterate, I didn't know how to deal with it yet. So today I would journal, I'd meditate, I'd go away, I'd speak to people, I'd touch wood, no one to be in the situation, but I'd be much more equipped to navigate it. Mm. Back then, what I did the thing that scared me the most, which was I opened up to my dad, I opened up to my mum, I opened up to my brother, and sort of cried in front of them and grieved in front of them and talked in front of them. I think so much of what we try and do when something like that happens is we go to the people around me. I want to be really strong. I don't want them carrying my grief. I want to carry theirs.
Yeah.
And counterintuitively, what I found was they're sitting there going, I just wish Jack would lean on me. I wish he would open up, right? And so when you do open up, you're not burdening them. You're actually giving them a gift. And that was the beginning of my healing, was having those conversations and opening up enough to grieve.
Mm. Do you find that, I guess, probably from having that experience and having the being able to see the difference between both, but initially, like, when things are scary or when we experience fear, we automatically, I can't generalise, most of us will want to shut down. And like you mentioned, you know, the more you started to open up, it's like when we open up to life, we actually allow all the horrible stuff that we are feeling to actually move through us rather than stay in there and be suppressed further down.
That's exactly it. And, you know, like in Unwritten, for instance, the book you were talking about earlier, I talk about finding the value in adversity and finding the gift in adversity, because I think through challenging periods of time is where the opportunity for the most personal growth and wisdom and sort of evolution can be found. However, get to that later. Like, you need to honour the loss or the tragedy, whatever's happened. You need to honour it. You need to sit with it. You need to cry. You need to wail if that's what you do. You need to talk. You need to express. You need to just sort of pause, and that you'll either pause for a day or a week or a month or 6 months or 12 months or longer, and it doesn't matter. There's no rules. And so I think you need to just give yourself absolute permission to be sad, and then you'll kind of know when you reach a point where you're then able to start learning and growing, and, you know, all the positive stuff. Let the positive stuff come later. Just honour the pain.
I like that you said that, because it's so often we just want to get out of where we are and think that it's wrong and we shouldn't be feeling like this and we shouldn't be stronger.
And I've got to get back to work, or this person's relying on me. And you know, obviously in some instances there are going to be real dependencies and sort of responsibilities of life. However, in my experience, people use those to a greater degree as an excuse to not look after themselves than what is actually true.
And then, so from this experience, would you say that it has been a big part, like a catalyst for you into your success today at all?
Yes, in that it grounds me a lot. And, like, there's just so much value to challenge, right? There's so much value to adversity. And, like, if I just sort of think out loud, I'm able, you know, like, so firstly, after Tom passed away, I had about 4 or 5 years of just business failure, right? Which means I'm forever humble. Like, you know, I know how bad life can get, and I know how ill-equipped I can be to deal with it, you know, probably to a far lesser degree these days, but... and so I've been blessed with a permanent state and sense of humility. Pain has blessed me with a permanent sense of empathy. And so it doesn't matter how, you know, again, successful in societal terms I become. If I've got, you know, my 22-year-old event manager sitting in front of me and she's upset, I can completely... regardless of what's going on, I can completely feel her, empathise with her, resonate with her, and therefore better lead her, right? Now I've got 90 staff and, you know, as you said, a few hundred thousand members in our community and all that. So it's just one example, but it gives me a better ability to empathise with people in challenge, because he who knows only good times is probably quite limited in how good of a leader you can be.
Yeah, absolutely. It's those moments of challenge that really enable us. Well, they stretch us and, like, pull us apart and then build us back together.
That's right. And that forces self-exploration, right? And so often, I reckon, like, 99% of people's challenges are personal challenges, right? Like, it's not many challenges that can't be solved by changing a perspective or becoming emotionally stronger, per se. By stronger, I don't mean bulletproof. I mean actually more vulnerable. But if you haven't been through that yourself, and if you haven't, then don't go looking for it. But if you haven't been through that yourself, then there'll be a glass ceiling on how meaningful a conversation you can have, or how meaningful a self exploration you can help somebody else prompt in themselves. And so when you have sort of had a few really sort of earth shaking experiences in your world. You know, it enables you to connect with other humans on a much deeper level.
Absolutely. I have to say, like, in the last year probably, I went through some major personal challenges. And what I got from that in coming out the other side from most of them was that it allowed me to be more compassionate with other people.
Mm. And that's what I mean, compassionate. Yeah, yeah.
To a degree that I just wasn't able to have to that degree previously because I hadn't gone through such pain or struggle.
Yes.
And going through that, I was able to go, okay, this person's going through something that very similar to what I did.
Yes.
And while I don't need to take on their pain, I can understand what they're going through and I can just, you know, hold that space for them and sometimes you just need to know that you're not alone in your process.
Mon, you said it better than I did. You don't need me here. I might start asking the questions. That's exactly what I meant to say.
But you said it perfectly too, Jack.
Compassion is the word. I think adversity builds compassion.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, totally. Nailed it. Love it.
Awesome. Now, you've got this great little line in your book where you say, I love to challenge people to do just once what they previously considered impossible mm-hmm. and see how their entire life changes forever as a result.
Mm.
What I love about this is it shows me or reminds me that that one small step in a completely different direction or doing that one thing that scares me can totally shift my life because so often we get caught up in a particular, let's just say we're in a rut or something, and we're continuously taking the same steps. And so by doing something different, you really change the course of your life.
Mm.
What have you witnessed in either like your team or the people around you that you have really pushed to take those leaps?
A lot. So, you know, as I said earlier, we've now got 90 people here at the Entourage, and if you went around and spoke to any of them, they would tell you that, well, let's say the vast majority of them, they would tell you that they are in a position now where they think differently about themselves. They have a different outlook on the world. They have a different view as to what's possible. They will tell you that while they've been here, they've worked harder than they've ever worked before, but they've proven to themselves that they can do so much more than what they previously thought.
Mm.
They will tell you that, therefore, given everything I've just said, their vision for the future is a lot larger than perhaps it was prior. And so that for me, that's what leadership is, right? And you don't want people to go, and that's because of the Entourage, or that's because of Jack. That's not the point. It's not about, you know, leadership can never be about recognition. You just want them to know that they're capable and powerful enough to create anything that they want in their life, and that they deserve the credit for that. So those are the major sort of shifts that you'll see in people that come and work here.
Mm. And I find as well that the book was also, it's kind of like a big eye-opener, and what you said as well before about perspective that allows people to see with a different way.
Mm.
You know, when you talk about Elon Musk and when I was reading, you know, what you wrote about him in his book, it made me really stop and think, wow, this guy has such a huge vision, you know, and that's his vision, that's what he's driven to do. And for me personally, as I read that, for some reason in that moment, I was like, wow, if this guy can go and do that, then I sure as hell can do whatever it is that I want to do. You know?
That's right.
Because, like, our imagination is infinite and this guy's just, you know, chosen to launch rockets into space.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So what's stopping us all from using our own imaginations to do whatever is in our own hearts?
Exactly. Even if that's, you know what, I'm going to pick up a guitar and learn to play the guitar.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't matter how big or small, but and that's exactly why I wanted to draw on those examples. I think I say in the introduction of the book that, you know, I tell these stories not so that we can copy them, but so that you may write yours.
Mm.
And so, you know, that's the thing. If Musk can build the best cars in the world, move America to a more sustainable energy source and a more sustainable energy consumption model in SolarCity and Tesla, while launching rockets and have us landing on Mars in the next 9 years. Then you know what? I can learn to play the fucking guitar. Really, what excuses do I have?
Exactly. And yeah. I like it because it puts it into perspective. And
exactly.
I think it's also important to remember that everything's relative to our own life. Like, we can't really compare because what we feel for something may be quite huge for us, but for someone else it might not be. But, you know, everything's always relative.
And that's the point, is that I don't, like, if I talk about myself, I don't want to launch rockets into Mars.
Yeah.
You know, Musk grew up reading comic books where they would fly rockets to Mars. So since he was a kid, he wanted to do that. You know, when Einstein was a kid, it's freaky. When Einstein was a kid, he used to imagine himself riding atop a beam of light. And so, you know, he's traveling at the speed of light on top of a beam of light. It's kind of like straddling a horse. And that, you know, that daydream that he had literally as a kid gave rise to some of his most sort of impactful theories. For me, it was always about education, and so that's the thread for my life. Mm-hmm. For Morello's mum, it was probably always, I want to build a great family, and so that's what she's done. And for my father, it was always, I want to do some really meaningful stuff throughout my career and probably move back to the bush and, you know, country town and drink wine and have a big garden, right? And so it's about finding your thread. As opposed to comparing ourselves to the Elon Musks of the world.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly. It's just bringing us back to ourselves, and I guess it also touches then on to not go into that comparison mode that
exactly.
a lot of us can sometimes fall into, because it's not about
that's
that.
That's right.
Mm. The other example in your book is the Spanx example, Sarah. She talks about in her family, failure was celebrated. And at the dinner table, her father would ask, you know, what failures
what have
they...
you failed at today? Yeah.
And when I read that, I was like, that is such an awesome
Isn't it?
Thing to have. Yeah, because we grow up thinking that failure is wrong and we shouldn't fail and that if we fail, that's a bad thing. And in her family, it was celebrated. And I thought, wow, that is fantastic, because it sets your path up and your perspective towards failure up for something completely different to everyone else. What's your take on failure? How have you experienced it? What's your view on it?
It's funny, I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent now, and hopefully I'll do this story justice, but I was talking with somebody, a guy we're talking about coming onto our academic board here at the Entrepreneurs. He's been in education for, I don't know, probably 40 years, you know, really experienced, very wise guy. And a genuinely smart guy. And he went over to Hawaii recently for an education conference, and he had, like, native Hawaiians, he had native Maoris, he had all of these different sort of native cultures in the room, right? And he'd talk about, you know, he was telling this story in almost a sort of self-deprecating way, which was really funny. And he was sort of saying, you know, like, he was talking about corporate sustainability. And they said, you know, Marcus, we were on this land for thousands of years, and after thousands of years it was in better shape than it was when we got here. What you call corporate sustainability, we call living. And then he'd talk about, you know, corporate social responsibility. And then they'd have this other story about, you know, what we do in our tribes is that we naturally look after one another, because we believe in being human and we believe in humanity. We call that being human, you know. And there's just all these examples of things that we've made really complicated or taken so far. Like, if you just accept that everything in our life is a mental construct, meaning it's just how we think about whatever, right?
Yeah.
For me, entrepreneurship, or even not even entrepreneurship, but leading a meaningful life is about returning to the truth. It's about unlearning everything that we've been conditioned to learn as we've grown up. One of those things that we were conditioned to learn was that making a mistake or failing, in inverted commas, is a bad thing. But where did we get, like, that's not a natural paradigm. You know, nature didn't give us that paradigm. That's a learned paradigm conditioned, in my view, through traditional education and sort of, you know, the cultures that we grow up in. And so you kind of need to question everything, right? I call them OPRs, other people's rules. and you go, you know, is failure a bad thing? And what does risk mean to me? And do I view my life, my career path through a lens of financial success, or do I view it through what's going to be meaningful and what's going to make me happy and bring me joy? You know, and you kind of need to question everything and go, what have I accepted throughout my life that just isn't true for me? And for most humans, failure is one of those things that nobody's taught fearing failure. You didn't start to walk and then you tripped over and then you stood up and then you tripped over again, then you stood up, you tripped over again, and you and your mum go, oh, she mustn't be a walker. You know, we'll stop her there. You know, she'll just roll around the rest of her life. Yeah. Failure is a learned concept. So just realizing that it's a mental construct, it actually doesn't exist, right? The only reason failure is a bad thing is because when we fail, we feel a sense of shame, we feel a sense of guilt, we feel a sense of embarrassment, we feel a sense of inadequacy. What if you didn't? You know, what if you truly knew that failing was a great thing and meant that you were progressing toward a goal and that you were becoming more of yourself? Then failure ceases to exist.
Beautifully said. I have nothing to add.
I'm sure you do. You're just being nice.
I can definitely have more of a conversation around it, but I think that's like beautifully said. Yeah. I completely agree. The older I get, the more I start to come across different ideas or concepts and think, hang on a second, is that mine or is that someone else's thought or fear that I've kind of embodied and taken along my journey with me?
That's right. And the answer is, you know, I think if you start to ask yourself, what are cultural paradigms that where do cultural paradigms exist that don't equal my truth?
Yeah.
And initially you go, oh, I don't know. But when you start to uncover everything you believe, often we discover that 98% of it isn't actually true for us. Mm. And it's societal bullshit that we picked up along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I have some signature questions for you now to wrap up. Sure.
Love it.
Tell me what moves you.
Humanity.
And what do you believe is your greatest asset?
Humanity.
And what scares you?
The lack of humanity.
And if you weren't in your career, what would you like to attempt?
I'd be a philosopher.
You already are a bit, Jack. All right. And what is the greatest piece of advice that you've been given?
To listen to your heart first and foremost. Mm. You know, radical surrender to heart. It's a lot harder than it sounds.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, that wraps up my questions for today. Thank you so much for joining me. It was a great conversation.
Thank you, Mon. As always, I loved our discussion.
Great. Thanks. We'll talk again soon.
See you, Mon.
Bye.